Okay, I think I'll get started. I really don't know why anybody came, because we have been treated so graciously that I think we can learn from you all instead of you all learning from me. We've been treated with very graceful behaviors, and that's wonderful. So thank you all for that. The title of this workshop is called Teaching Social Graces, and right away I'm turned off. Social graces, who are we trying to be? Let's just call it good manners, all right? We're doing good manners is what we're after. It also says that, if I can find my place here, about that our children have learned their behaviors. And I don't know if I quite agree, because when I think of learning, I think of someone that has consciously tried to do something. But our children have learned behaviors. If you want to know the concept, the difference there between learning, to me, and a learned behavior, is like the child that wants something, and so he... He asked his mom for it, and she says, no, you can't have it. He asked the second time, and she says, I said you couldn't have it. And so this child starts crying, and that child knows the exact tone and loudness to get on his mother's nerves so that he gets his way. He learns that. He does it without even thinking. So what I'm saying is a learned behavior is done automatically. It's not something I set out to do. It's something I do because of the situation I've grown up in. And that's the way it is with manners. Our manners are based on our culture, our family, those that we have been around, we act like they do. And so as teachers, if we're trying to change that, we're working against something that the child is even unaware of, that they're doing it, if they have some bad behavior. Now, there's also a positive side to this. I was recently at a retirement party for a doctor. I was on the board of a clinic and was participating with that clinic when we hired this doctor. And so they invited me back when he went through retirement. And there was a group of people around there talking about this doctor, how he was always putting other people first. And someone said, isn't that the Christian way? And there was a group of us around where that round, and we were all from the Mennonite setting. This was a Mennonite clinic. And we had hired a person to run the office from outside the Mennonite faith. And she said, yes, that is the Christian way, but you people do it so graciously. I've never been around a group of people do so freely and just naturally do it. That is a social grace. That is a manner that we want to bring. That's the ones we want to, that's a positive one. We, in our culture, have that mentality of putting others first, and it just naturally happens. It is a learned behavior. So we want to move in that direction as we work with young people and children, that their manners are natural. But we run into the difficulty in that we have to overcome the learned behaviors that they've picked up over the years. Now, manners or good manners, I like to think of them as treating people with respect and making them comfortable. To me, good manners is not a set of rules that you need to go by. It's making those around you feel comfortable, regardless if their culture is the same as yours or not. We need to focus on making our guests comfortable. And, you know, I think a general definition is simply as saying interacting in a way that people are comfortable. To me, that's the way we should define our goal. Each setting has different standards. What do y'all think of as being different in yours than mine? Would y'all have any idea how your culture differs from mine? Well, I'm going to give an example of something. I won't use you all, okay? I'll use Canada. Some of you are from Canada. But my wife and I were in Canada, and we sat down for a meal. We had the prayer. And after the prayer, we all sat there looking at each other. Why? Because in the Shenandoah Valley, where I'm from, to be polite, we hand the bread and pass it around the table. What do they do in Canada? They set butter and bread all the way down through the table, and they're being polite to us by letting us go first. So it's a stalemate. We're waiting for them to hand it to us, and they're being nice to let us go first. Well, after we found out what was happening, we had a good laugh about it. But I've noticed somewhat of that in this culture. And y'all probably think we're uppity because we have to hand stuff around the table real politely for guests. That's one difference that I've noticed between us and Canada. What do you all think is different? How do you think you all differ from other cultures? And it's not that you're wrong, okay? You're not wrong. Just how do you think you do things that are different? What's that? You're good at being quiet. Amen. One thing I've noticed is your handshake. Man, y'all shake hands, and it's just great. You shake hands with everybody, and you say morning without an R in it, right? And what I like about that handshake, you'll see somebody coming up, and it starts back about right here. Wham. That's y'all's handshake, and it's great. What do I do different? How have I been different? I haven't offended anybody with my actions yet. I'm not as shy. You don't know how nervous I am. But we do differ. And the point I'm trying to make is, it's not significant that we differ. We, Shirley and I, feel comfortable here. You all have good manners. That's the key. And I will say that in most cases, good manners means when you go into another culture, you do as they do. You don't go barging in and force your mannerisms on them. It's the old saying, when you're in Rome, you do like the Romans. Y'all heard that one? And I think there's a lot of truth in that. However, that's good manners. Then there's a courtesy of where you do respect other people. If you do notice that you're different, that you can respect that and try to blend with theirs. That's great. That shows social graces also. Now, the workshop title was, How Do You Teach These Things? And there are some that are universal that we want to teach. And there's no question that the best way to teach is by example, right? But when you're working with students, children, I think there are some things that we as teachers can do. We can actually have them practice good manners. And the school setting is an excellent place to do that because there you have structure and you expect them to learn, to get in line, to wait on one another, to respect one another. And so the school is an excellent place for us as teachers to teach good manners or social graces. And they teach good manners, and they also teach structure and order. Now, the thing of good manners is that in some settings, being gracious or having good manners would be considered being a hypocrite, that you're putting on airs, that that's not really you, and so you shouldn't be doing it. Is there any weight to that? Should that be considered? Is it wrong to act graciously to people? Is it putting on airs that you shouldn't be doing? Pardon? Mm-hmm. Other words, if it becomes a norm for us, then it's not hypocrisy, is it? Mm-hmm. But so I think in some settings it is to say please and thank, even to do those sometimes are considered being uppity, a hypocrite, worldly. Have you ever thought of that approach? But that's the way the world does it, so we don't want to do that. I haven't detected that in y'all's culture, but there are regions that would do that. Some there are some reasons that some people might not teach their children good manners. And I'm just throwing them out as things that I have read about, not that I have seen them. A story that I think illustrates what I really mean when I talk about good manners is a story of a young girl. She would not have been from our culture because her mother had married, evidently a second marriage. But anyway, the story I think makes a good point. This mother and daughter had went to visit a rich, I'll use the term rich, aunt. And so the mother was very nervous about how her daughter would act in the presence of this aunt. And so they were eating, and everything was going great. The little girl was sitting beside of her aunt, and the mom was there. They were having a wonderful meal. And this little girl, I don't know what time period this was, but slips up and sticks her finger into some sauce there and tastes it. Of course, the mother is petrified. Here's this rich aunt, and her little daughter has just done the most embarrassing thing you can think of. And you know what happened? That aunt took her finger and stuck it in the sauce and said, "I have always been wanting to do that." So you see, that was good manners. She did something that was totally against etiquette, but she made her guests comfortable. And that's what we want to do. So, manners don't naturally come. They take effort. Our human nature does not cause us to just naturally be polite all the time. But if you come out of a culture that does it, it is our natural mannerism. That's one of the good things of coming from a culture that respects others. Another way I think of teaching children an object lesson, but you know, talk to your students about how it feels when somebody expresses appreciation to them, or express appreciation to a group and then ask how they felt. If they can understand the feeling that occurs when you receive that, then that gives some motivation to turn around and do it for others. So it's not just practicing it, but having students actually feel the warmness, or whatever you want to call it, that you get when someone is nice to you, when somebody shows you a good social grace, where you're thanked for something or complimented on something. So that's another way I think we can help students. Another way is creating little scenes where they practice. Giving an apology. Did you ever think about it? I think our children know how to say, I'm sorry. They know how to say it. Do they know how to say it in a way that they mean it? So they have learned over the years to say, I'm sorry, to get out of trouble, right? And you say, if I say I'm sorry, then what, life goes on. But I think a child needs to recognize the need to apologize, take it another level. And if we, see my notes here, if we give a little dialogue and where they practice saying I'm sorry in a way that goes beyond just saying it and moving on. Okay, here's kind of a little sequence I've got. You tell them that they should look at the person and call them by name and say, I'm sorry for doing so-and-so. So they've gone beyond just saying I'm sorry and running. They've recognized the person, and I think they need to be taught this. And then they need to state the potential, what happened, why they're sorry. You know, what was their excuse for it? And then wait and let the person reply or respond. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever thought about it, how difficult it is to, when you're nervous, to stop and let someone have the time to talk. If you're given an apology, and you're given a sincere apology, your tendency is to ramble and ramble and ramble, explaining yourself. But you need to teach them to just stop and let the other person say, I accept your apology, or something like that. But giving these little dialogues, showing them, illustrating to them what it means to actually mean you're sorry, and do an apology. Do a real apology. And then the flip side of that, I think, is actually teaching them to accept an apology. You know, what do you do when somebody comes up and says, I'm sorry? Once again, I think it's important to teach them to look at the person and acknowledge the apology and listen to what the person's saying and make this something that has an impact of accepting an apology in a way that goes beyond winking it off and going on. Because when we get to be adults, we should do these things more seriously, I think, than what we do. Take it serious, saying, I'm sorry. Talk to the person. Accept the apology. Now, there's one I'd like to have your help on. How do you accept a compliment? How do you accept a compliment? Mennonites are horrible at accepting compliments. Because we are humble people, and we don't like to be complimented because we don't know what to do with it. What are you supposed to do with it? I mean, if we say thank you, we feel like we're being proud, don't we? I really don't know the answer. Do you all? When somebody compliments you and you get all shy, oh, it's nothing. Anybody could do that. I guess you have to make a thank you kind of in a way it doesn't sound proud. Okay, Joanna? Mm-hmm. I think if you say, I think it's possible to say thank you without feeling like you're being proud of it. But it is an awkward place for us. And you know what? It's not a bad awkwardness. It really isn't. I'm glad I'm dealing with that issue instead of a proud people. Because if a proud people would be difficult, they're not following what I talked about this morning, wisdom of God. We're not to be proud. So maybe that's a good problem. Yeah. Go ahead. Right. Mm-hmm. Good point. Yeah, I don't know If y'all are interested in knowing what is considered good manners or not, how many of you have heard the term Emily Post? Supposedly wrote the Bible on etiquette, good manners, how to be polite at the table. And you know, sometimes when I'm in a formal setting, I do wonder if I'm doing it right. So I've got a few things here that we'll just go down across this list. And it's not that I think y'all need to change your ways and start doing them, but it might help you feel comfortable when you're in these settings. The whole thing of what do you do when you sit down to a table with four forks on one side and three spoons on the other? So uncomfortable, isn't it? Well, I think you all know the rule, right? You start on the outside, take the outside spoon for your soup probably, and when you're done with that, you put it in your bowl and you take your bowl up, and then you start with the salad fork and move in. They're in the order you need them, okay? Remember that. They're in the order you need them. The only problem is you don't forget to put the salad fork in your bowl so that they take it, and you're not eating your salad when you should be using your dinner fork. That's my biggest problem, hanging on to one too long. Because you simple rule, start on the outside and move in. Okay. All right, what do you do with that cloth napkin that's laying there across your plate? Joanna? Wipe your mouth. That's what it's there for, isn't it? Good old honk. All right, first thing you're supposed to do is take that napkin and spread it on your lap. Spread it on your lap, okay? So, now, another thing, they pass the food. When do you start eating? All right, if it's a small group, you wait till everybody has their food before you start eating. Now, if it's a large group, they say you can start eating earlier or quicker because you don't need to wait for the last person because your food may get cold if you've got a big table. So it's okay to start eating as soon as you serve yourself if the table is large. But on dessert, never. Never supposed to eat. Start eating dessert until everybody has received theirs because desserts are usually cold. Y'all taking notes? I want y'all to do this right. All right, elbows. Elbows are where? Off the table. Except it's okay after everybody's finished and you're conversing. I understand it's okay then to lean up on the table. But they are supposed to be off the table while you're eating. Now, here's another one. Cutting up your food. There's two ways, but both of them require one thing. Cutting one piece, eating it, and then cutting another piece. That is proper. Now, there's an American style and a European style. I don't know if there's a Mexican style or not. But with the American style, it's really awkward. It's called the crossover. You have your fork in your left hand, your knife in your right, and you cut your piece of meat. You lay your knife down, you switch your fork over, and eat with your right hand. Now, left-handed people might be okay, I'm not sure. But one piece at a time, and you cross over, and you always eat, have your fork in your right hand. Now, in Europe, they say it's okay to cut your piece of meat and keep the fork in the left. You don't need to do the crossover. But in both settings, you cut one piece and eat it, then cut your next piece. Y'all do that one? Y'all do the crossover? Have you ever seen the cross? Yeah. Seen both? I've seen both, too, and it almost does look a little uncultured to to have the knife in one hand, to have two pieces of equipment in your hand. Looks like you're really going after it, you know. Let's see. Now here's another one. Bread rolls. Breaking up in bite-sized pieces and buttering each one individually as you eat it. That's definitely not Pennsylvania Mennonite. What do they do in Pennsylvania? In Pennsylvania, they pass the bread, they pass the butter, they pass the jelly, and everybody pigs out on their jelly bread. Then they start passing the main course. So cultures are different, but this is supposedly the proper way to do it. All right, eat slowly and chew with your mouth closed. I think we're okay on that one, aren't we? For the most part, unless we're around the family. Now, ask instead of reaching. In other words, instead of reaching across someone to pick up a bowl, you ask them to hand it to you. Now, I read, though, that in some cultures that's okay, and in China, it's actually okay to stand up and reach down the table and get something. But that gives you an idea how different the cultures can be. Say excuse me if you burp. I think that's probably typical. Although in some cultures you need to burp to show that you have been satisfied. If you need to leave the table, say excuse me. And how do you pass the pitcher, the cream pitcher or the gravy pitcher? How do you pass that with the handle? Which way does the handle go? Yeah, you turn it so that your guests can grab the handle, right? You turn the handle so they can get it. Now, this isn't in my list. We had this discussion coming down here. Lyndon set us straight. Which way around the table should the food go? Yeah, it's counterclockwise. You hand it to the right of the person. Is that right? Okay. You hand it from your left to their right, and that'd be counter. No? Yeah, right. Yeah. It's counter. I know that. I'm just trying to figure which hand that goes to. Yeah. I usually hand it to the guest that's the most esteemed first. It might go backwards then. But don't use your own silverware in the serving dish. Don't say, I don't like this, and say please and thank you. And one that's added on the bottom, keep your smartphone off the table, on silent, and in your pocket. That's one that is new because of the way times have changed. And how many of you go to restaurants and see a couple sitting there and each one of them staring at their smartphone? How many of you do it? No, never, never. I'll be honest with you, I get disgusted with myself and my smartphone. It's, yeah, I'm just like everybody else. And this is a little bunny trail. But I've read that when a person looks at their smartphone, the screen gives your brain a shot of dopamine. And dopamine is the chemical that drugs like cocaine trigger in your brain. So when you look at your smartphone screen, it's like taking a small dose of cocaine. And cocaine is addictive. And so you are getting addicted. Your brain is getting addicted to your smartphone because it wants that little shot. It wants that little spark. Scary, isn't it, that we can be addicted to a phone? And they should be turned off and actually out of sight, the way this says it. Now you know how to act in the formal behavior with a formal setting. Another one that I meant to put back with the practicing is introductions. How do you introduce people? And this is something you can have students practice, introducing individuals, because there is a proper way to do it depending on the age or the position of the person you're introducing. So if you meet someone and you're with somebody, your mother, your daughter, your son, or your dad or someone, and they don't know the person you're meeting, of course, children, it's different. There are different situations for them, but how do you introduce? They should be trained that an introduction, when you walk up to someone, it should come first. And often, for myself, I find that I'll go start talking to a person for a while, and I've probably done it down here already, and I'll say, oh, this is my wife back here, and she just loves that I waited so long to do it. She's ignoring me right now, but the thing, introductions should be made immediately so that everybody's comfortable. Everybody knows each other. So you make it immediately, and then you name the honored person first. So when you're with men and women, you would give the name of the woman first. If you're with an older person, you mention the name of the older person first. And if there's a guest of honor, then it says that these take precedent over both of them that I just mentioned. I'm not sure exactly what they mean by guest of honor, but if it's someone from some type of position, a business, a president of something, then you would give their name first. And like I said, you could mock this up in your classroom and have students introducing different age levels, male and female, and this type of thing. It'd be a way for them to practice. Then it says a woman should stand when being introduced to someone much older or more distinguished than themselves. So if you would happen to be seated, a woman, when she would be happen to be seated, then she should stand. It says that a man should stand when being introduced to a lady. Men should shake hands. Y'all don't have any problem with that. But a woman, shake a woman's hand only if she offers it. Y'all aware of this? Y'all are in charge. If you're being introduced to a man and you don't want to shake his hand, just don't stick it out, all right? And that's the rule. That's actually down in the rules, that a man does not shake a woman's hand unless she offers it. And then proceed from there. And then after the introduction, then you can proceed, make some comment. Nice to meet you, or something, recognize them. Go ahead and recognize them. Now, another situation, strangers. This is one I talk about with the high school students about how do you meet strangers? Do y'all talk to people in the checkout line? Are you one of these people that turns around, you're waiting for there, and you turn around and start talking to them? Do y'all do that? You're my kind. It's fun, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's because you've done so much of it. But also the stranger at church, or any stranger that you come up to, good manners would indicate that you should make them comfortable. That's a little different than the checkout line, but the whole thing of greeting strangers and just making some comment, smiling, those type things make the world a happier place. And I encourage people to do that. It can be simply something high. In fact, we were just talking about this at school this week, or last week. I wasn't in there this week. But and this one girl, we said, say, you know, start talking about the weather. The weather is a great thing to talk about in conversations, right? The world would probably stop if we didn't have the weather to start conversations with. But this one student said, that's a cop-out. We need to come up with a better way to open conversation than to talk about the weather. I think it is possible, but personally, I don't have any problem talking about the weather as a starting point. So simply do it. Smile. Say, how you like the weather? It's kind of warm today, kind of cold today, rainy today. Just say something. Now, I will say this. There are people who will not respond in the checkout line. Don't take it personal, and just go on about your way. But those are very few I've found. Most of them will return some type of conversation. And the same thing about the person at church. You can go up to them and try to make conversation, and it goes, duh. But don't let that stop you from trying. Don't let that stop you from trying. You do it a time or two, and it doesn't go anywhere, that's fine. Keep trying, because we are called, I think, to be people that reach out and interact with others. Anything y'all want to say? My mouth's getting dry. It's y'all's turn. What was y'all expecting to learn in this class? You just to hear me ramble? Really, I think that we are a gracious people. Mennonites are taught to respect others. And so I don't see it as a big problem, except perhaps when we go into other settings and maybe we can do things unknowingly that are somewhat crude. So I don't think it hurts to know some of these things that I went over and to teach your children in your class some of the things that I've went over, so that when they are in a formal setting or they are out in society, that they won't come across as crude. Because we don't want to be uppity people and high. However, we want to be a good witness for Christ. And to come across as crude or possibly a lower class or uneducated or something, it actually can be a bad mark on our witness. So I do think we need to cultivate good manners, and that we are aware of what is expected in some of these settings. Doesn't mean we have to be perfect, but I think we should try to reach out to people and show a good light of being friendly and mannerly. And once again, another little story about what I think of as good manners. I read this story years ago in Reader's Digest, and it just stuck with me. This man had married a lady, and she had a pretty high opinion of herself. And he had come from evidently a little wrong side of the tracks, you might say. And it was a time period when in lower classes they ate with their knife. Everything with their knife. Do anybody remember that type of setting? I remember my great-grandfather, when he stayed with us, he would do that. He would just use his knife for everything. And I think it went back to a time period when they didn't have 15 forks and spoons. And so this man did that, and his wife was appalled. She couldn't stand that he would eat with a knife, and so she was always straightening out. I'm sure that made for some interesting meals. Anyway, there was a neighborhood boy that was from a little lower class, and he would come to their home. And he always had a great time there with the dad. But they could never get him to stay for a meal. For some reason, that was the boundary. He did not feel comfortable eating with them. Well, one day they finally convinced him to eat. And they sat down and they started eating. And this little boy picked up his knife and started eating. And what do you think happened? The man picked his up and started eating. Make your guests comfortable. That's the key. Okay? Thank you all.